Howdy, 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 y'all. It's your boy, Matt, coming back at you with another episode of the Fat Alaskan Podcast. In today's episode, I'm joined by Mr. Joe Jackson. Joe is a history teacher in Anchorage, as well as a published author. His book, It's Only Fishing, is a firsthand account of his experiences fly fishing the streams of Central and South Central Alaska. I first got to know Joe when he was a senior in high school, which was my first year working in the high schools back in Wyoming. Both of our paths led us north to Alaska, and a decade later, we were able to meet up and catch up on what's been happening in both of our lives. I hope you enjoy listening to Joe discuss his experiences trapping, hunting, and especially fishing here in the great state of Alaska. I know that you moved up here for the trapping.
Yeah.
That was kind of, do you still do that at all? Or?
I don't, but the most recent trapping I've done, I caught two squirrels on the roof over here. But no, it's in Fairbanks, it was really, really hard to run a trap line just because, you know, other people had staked those things out, you know, 30 years before I got there. And everything's public land. It's really hard to get on anything private. So what I had, what was fair game to me was fair game to everybody else. And I had trappers that would come and put sets 3 feet from mine. And, you know, I don't know if I got any stolen catches, but I suspect I did. And just dealing with that was hard. And until I get in a place where I can, you know, get a snow machine and go way out there and have everything to myself, I don't really want to deal with that anymore. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. What about, like, what all have you gotten into for hunting?
Mostly just bird and snowshoe hare hunting. I haven't done really any big game. The one time I was going to do a big game hunt, Emmy and I were going to go up for caribou on the Dalton Highway, and I realized that I'd rather fish for those Sea Run Dolly Varden instead. So I brought the rifle, but didn't even scope out a caribou. So
gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah, fly fishing is definitely what I've glommed onto since coming up here. So
okay,
yeah,
and mostly for like
when we were in Fairbanks, it was everything's grayling up there really. So that was kind of what I fell in love with, and then coming to Anchorage, of course, it's more salmon and trout, just being where we're at geographically. So really, whatever swims. But yeah, I'll always nurse a fond love for grayling, you know. So yeah.
So are you sticking around here in Anchorage mostly for your fishing, or are you going down the peninsula, or?
I do a lot of driving. I don't know how many miles I put on my truck in the summertime, but it's close to 10,000, you know, just going back and forth. Since Fairbanks was kind of where I dipped my toes in the water, you know, first coming to Alaska, that's where I was, and so that's kind of familiar. And so I tend to drive north whenever I want to go fishing. You know, whether that's parks, highway streams for rainbows, or all the way up into Delta for grayling, I tend to head that direction. But of course, you know, salmon, you always want to head south. At least I do. Just Kenai Peninsula, that's, you know, unparalleled in terms of salmon. So
that's kind of what we're known for down
there. Yeah, totally. But then my wife's family lives out near Glen Allen in the Copper River Valley, and that's got, of course, Copper River Reds, world famous fish, and. I always like to head out there whenever the sockeyes are running hot. That's kind of something I look forward to every year. So
yeah, I was looking at the reports. They're saying that it's about 2 weeks behind this year.
Yeah,
fishing game pushed the dip net season back and everything.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, hopefully the numbers look okay. It might be a slowly building run, but we'll see. Yeah, 2 weeks late, definitely. Last year it was really good, like last week of June, first week of July, and I think it might be about that this year. Maybe first part of July is going to be when it's hot. But
gotcha. Going to be like stopped here to see you, and now I'm headed to Valdez, so I'm going to be going right through all of that. So.
Okay, well, you'll have to let me know if you see the campgrounds full to bursting. That's usually a pretty good sign that the salmon are in. So
I know, like, my buddies that I'm going to fish with and that, they and all of their friends and everybody go and do that dip net, and so they'll have the
lowdown, huh? Okay.
Yep. Yep. So, you know, the grayling, I don't know, with me being down in Southeast originally, and then down on the Kenai, there's not a whole lot of grayling down on the peninsula.
Yeah.
That's one of those that everybody says is super easy to catch, but it's still on my bucket list because I just haven't been where they are.
Yeah, they're definitely, they're not geographically isolated. I mean, in a way they are, because they need really clean and cold water to, you know, undergo their reproduction and feeding and all that, which leads them to, you know, parts of Canada and interior Alaska is kind of their ancestral home, I guess you could say. So coming to Fairbanks, I was just spoiled with them. And yeah, you hear all the time that they're super easy to catch. I mean, they're like the equivalent of a bluegill in the lower 48, you know. But what I love about them is you can get the big, wily old grayling that are, you know, as discerning as a trout and as hard to catch. So they're pretty fun. If you want, you know, you can have the dichotomy of being easy to catch, you know, casting dry flies to willing fish all day, or you can have the more challenging fish that kind of hone your skills. So
kind of like the whitetails down south and back home for both of us.
Yeah.
Could always go out and get a little bitty buck.
Yeah.
Trying to get that big boy is a little tougher.
Totally. Yeah. So as they match your skill level, or they can, and they can challenge you, or they can, you know, be obliging. So
perfect.
They're cool.
Perfect. That's, you know, we didn't really hit on this yet. And so wanted to talk about, you know, you were actually one of my first students when I first got into working in the schools and that sort of thing. We're from the same area, and then both ended up here together too.
Pretty so crazy.
What got you into teaching? Like,
yeah, that's a good question, and kind of a serendipitous journey for me. So I, right out of college, I got my degree in wildlife biology in Fairbanks there. And right out of college, I got offered a job doing video production for eCampus, the University of Alaska Fairbanks eCampus department, producing videos for their online courses. And through the course of that, you know, just producing videos, I got to see what, like, my colleagues were doing and what the professors were doing. Before that, I thought, you know, online teaching, like, it's cool, it's flexible, it's neat, but it doesn't lead to meaningful learning experiences. And what I was seeing kind of trumped my beliefs before that. And I thought, these people are doing really cool things. And it made me excited about education, and I thought, there's no way I can teach elementary. Like, I don't really want to teach college, so the sweet spot's going to be secondary. So I just kind of jumped in and got my license in secondary ed and my master's, and have been fortunate enough to land in a pretty great school here in Anchorage. So
nice. Benefit of teaching is we now have this time of year.
Exactly. Yeah. Summers, you're free. So, yeah.
You said you were traveling a lot, and it's like really nice to have this time so you can.
Yeah. Yeah. That flexibility is pretty awesome. So, but then too, you know, it's kind of a bummer in fall, because that's when the fishing's really good and I want to be bird hunting, but you know, you can always do weekends and after school you can make stuff work. So
yeah,
it's just about balancing, you know.
That's, for me, it's always been moose season is
like,
when I was in Cake, when I was there in the village, it was really nice because there were spots that I could hunt before and after school even.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, down on the peninsula, and even everybody thinks, oh, it's Alaska, there's moose around every tree. But when you get here on the road system, you got to be able to travel.
You got
to
work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the kind of wildlife densities you mentioned on the road system, it's not easy to find good fishing, trapping, hunting. Like, you really have to work for it. And I mean, even out in the boonies, just being so far north, like, wildlife densities are not what they are, you know. Say at home in Wyoming, like, you can go for a walk and kick up like 5 rooster pheasants and a couple of deer in Wyoming. You know, here you're lucky to see like a spruce grouse. It's just, you got to go a lot farther to encounter the wildlife, you know.
That's one of my best days that I still remember was when I was teaching with you.
Yeah.
It was actually just up the creek about 2 miles from where you guys used to live.
Okay.
I was home by 7:30 and had 2 rabbits, 2 ducks, and a deer in the back of the truck.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to get that much variety that fast here.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. You got to be putting on the miles to do that.
Especially if you don't have the toys.
Exactly.
You were talking about before we started recording about how it's tough to trap if you don't have a snow machine and that.
Yeah. I mean, it can be done, and I did it. I ran a Martin trap line totally on snowshoes for several years in Fairbanks, but, you know, it just gets anything on the road system, it's hard to maintain that because, you know, people, they all want the same thing, right? The outdoor experience, and they can come to encroach upon territories, but it's all public land, so they have as much of a right to be there as I do, you know?
The
the great thing about being here is also kind of the frustrating thing is it's, what is it, like 90-some% public land?
Yep.
So that's great because you can go just about anywhere, but so can everyone else.
Exactly. And that was the toughest pill to swallow coming up here. You know, my first couple of years in college, I'm like, well, back in Wyoming, I just, you know, do some work for a rancher, and pretty soon you have 1,400 acres all to yourself to trap, you know, just close the gate when you're coming through. But up here, it was not the same. In fact, I went door to door asking landowners to trap Martin, and they all thought I was crazy, you know, run me off with shotguns, basically. But yeah, just the difference in land ownership is that was pretty drastic for me to experience.
It's been kind of a new experience for me as well. And that's, again, the benefit of when I was in the village. Like, I was on an island that had 500 people.
Yeah.
And, you know, only a fraction of those actually hunted and fished. Everyone else was like, you know, just trying to do their day-to-day surviving and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so it was nice because you could get out and, you know, we had some of the best silver fishing that you can find.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the fishing hole. And when somebody else shows up, they go a quarter of a mile away.
Yeah.
Here, it seems like they go a quarter of a foot
away. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they really pack in the good fishing holes. Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is take a drive to Bird Creek or even Ship Creek downtown Anchorage. And, you know, those are true urban fisheries where, yeah, people are standing 2 feet away from each other as far as you need to cast without knocking someone in the head, you know?
They call it combat fishing
for a reason. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly of Alaskan fishing.
You got into the fishing up here enough that you also decided to be an author, too.
Yeah. I've always kind of had a penchant for writing and telling stories. But, fly fishing particularly is just one of those contemplative sports, I feel like, that leaves a lot of time for thinking and reflection. And, you know, doing it in Alaska, there's no shortage of, you know, cool things to write about, you know, whether it's the beauty of the fish, the beauty of the places you're fishing, or just, you know, the thinking that goes on behind the scenes. It's kind of a wealth of opportunity for writing, in my opinion. And the two have really seemed to go hand in hand. You know, when I'm fly fishing, I bring a notebook, and if things are slow, I sit on a gravel bar and write a little bit. And if they're not, then I just fish and enjoy it. So
sounds good.
Yeah.
What is the name of your book?
It's called It's Only Fishing. You can find it on Amazon, IndieBound, pretty much any online bookseller. They have it here in Anchorage. I don't know how far out it's, you know, percolated in terms of bookstores, but it's through Epicenter Press. So if you want to buy it direct from the publisher, you can do that. So
that's very cool.
Yeah.
So you were saying grayling. Have you gone for like the dolly, the char, all of that? Is that all part of the book? Or
So the book, yeah, it takes place during the pandemic. So I was working totally online, and I was transitioning between that video production job I mentioned earlier and then teaching. So that was kind of a weird year, just obviously in terms of the pandemic, but then also a pretty drastic career shift for me. Grayling fishing was a lot of what I was doing because we were in the process of moving from Fairbanks to Anchorage. And you can kind of see that in the writing, you know, early on it's interior based, and then it starts, fading into more south central stuff. So grayling, trout, a little bit of salmon, and there's some dolly varden thrown in there as well. But, pike as well. We did some pike fishing, but yeah.
That's kind of the big change from moving from Fairbanks down here seems to be like what it is, the target species and that kind of thing.
Yeah, there seems to be, I won't say more variety because, I mean, there is variety in Fairbanks. It's just for different species, you know. Obviously, you have very limited salmon runs in Fairbanks just because they're, you know, 900 river miles from the Bering Sea. Whereas here, you know, you're a mile in some places, or sometimes right in the tidal zone. Yeah, the variety down here is just more intriguing, I guess, to me, because I didn't have that when we were in Fairbanks. So I try and make the most of that. Both places offer equal opportunity. I think I'm willing to drive however far, get up as early as I need to. So I make the most of our summers. You know, you're saying teaching offers that flexibility, and I try and squeeze every every ounce of fun out of it that I can, you know.
That's when you're not remodeling the house.
Exactly. So
I want to get up to the, you know, the North Slope and catch some of those big char.
Yeah.
I'd like to get them when they're the super pretty colors.
The colored up one. Yeah, the tomato bellies. Yeah.
I know there's a few places down on the peninsula that you can catch them, but they're not quite the same. They're not near as big.
Yeah, they're not coming out of the Arctic Ocean to spawn. And yeah, up there, the rivers run north, which throws people off, you know. Threw me off when we were driving. It's like, which direction is that? Well, it's north. Everything's flowing towards the Arctic. It's crazy. Yeah, I have yet to time that run correctly. What I'd really like to do is get a pack raft and do a flyout and you know, go up into the headwaters and float back to the highway or something. But those fish, you kind of have to, well, like anything anadromous, right? You have to time them. Otherwise, it's a ghost town. Nothing's going to be there. So I think we were a little bit late when we went. It was early first week of September, and we were fishing the main stem Sagavan Erktok River. Which that's the dollies would be in there like second, third week of August, I think, because they're making their way up into the Ivishak, Achuca, like all the headwater streams where they actually spawn. So, yeah, if I were to do it again, I'd change the timing a little bit.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Were you going specifically for fish, or were you going on a hunt?
We were going, yeah, it's a good question. We were going on a caribou hunt. I got the tag and had my rifle and everything, and then I started learning more about the Dolly Varden. I'm like, well, I'd kind of rather try and catch one of those than shoot a caribou. So, yeah, I devoted all my time to fishing and didn't catch the dollies, obviously, but caught some chums and some huge grayling. There's some awesome grayling fishing up there. So it was pretty fun.
Right.
Yeah.
All on flies, I'm assuming.
On flies, yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I've gravitated toward. The exceptions are I'll fish for pike, burbot, and sockeye salmon on spinning gear, but otherwise it's all flies for me.
I know a lot of guys back, like, down south that go after the sockeye specifically with the fly gear. Maybe not a fly on there because the way those sockeye are, they're not biting the flies, but it just seems like it's easier to cast that fly gear over and over.
Yeah.
It's kind of designed for that.
It is, yeah. And the old Kenai flip, right? You throw it up, drift it down, throw it up. So where I fish for sockeyes on the Clutina, I've kind of got a spot that I fished, that same exact spot. It's about the size of like an RV or something, you know, 50 feet long or whatever. I fished that same exact spot for 8 years, and that's always been my spot. And one of the reasons I like it is because you have to actually make a cast. Like, you can't just do the flip. And I like that, you know, methodical casting, opening the bail and all that. So I could do it with a fly rod, but there's actually I think there's a line in my book where I say flinging the amount of weight you need for sockeye fishing on a fly rod is like towing a stock trailer with a Lamborghini. Like, it just feels wrong. And so that's kind of why I've gravitated towards the spinning gear. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
But
Other than the caribou hunt, you've been getting in on much other hunting, doing much?
I've gotten pretty heavy into bird hunting the last few years, you know, upland birds, ptarmigan, spruce grouse, ruff grouse, sharp tails. I think that's, you know, not a lot of people do that in Alaska, and I don't know. I've gravitated towards the small game hunting. Just, you know, my wife's father, he used to own the largest hog farm in the state. He's since kind of retired out of that, and so we've always had pork and beef, and growing up in Wyoming, you know, we always had beef, and it's like I'm spoiled to the point where I don't necessarily need big game, and so I do small game because, you know, I enjoy wild game, but I don't need that much of it, you know. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Kind of a target rich environment too around here for that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it's just fun to get out because when I'm, you know, fishing, I see a lot of snowshoe hares and game birds, so those two kind of go hand in hand. I can be scouting and fishing at the same time, and then fall rolls around and I can, you know, it's tough in fall because it's like, do I bring the shotgun or the fly rod or both? And then you got to trade off and on with them. So, yeah, it's an embarrassment of opportunities in fall sometimes. So,
and I know one of the things that I've kind of gotten into, there's a lot of the spruce grouse down my way, down around Kenai.
Yep.
And a number of the places that are archery only and that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So it's been making my own flu arrows and
shooting
them with a bow. That's been a lot of fun.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Plus, I got the dog, and it's kind of hard to hunt moose with the dog.
I bet. Yeah.
He loves the grouse hunting.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. I've I'm slated to get a Llewellyn setter in August or September of 24. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was going to be 23, and then we found out that we're expecting a baby. So it's like, oh, push the dog back a year so that we don't have to deal with a puppy and an infant, you know. So
it's only going to potty train one of them at a time.
Exactly, yeah. And so
you're barely potty trained yourself.
Exactly, so. Yeah. But, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to both of those new companions we got coming. So
that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Have a couple of good hunting and fishing partners.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
Cool. Does the wife get out and fish with you too? Or?
She does. She we have some different philosophies when it comes to fishing. You know, I'm like sun up to sundown sort of thing. And I mean, she tolerates it. If I manage expectations beforehand, she's a lot better than if I say, okay, we're just gonna go out for a few hours and it ends up being, you know, all day, then that's a little different than sticking to my word, you know. So I've learned to be more honest about what the plan's gonna be, and then, you know, pare those plans down to just a couple hours so she enjoys it and isn't miserable. So
fair enough. Or she can take time to plan an escape route and get away if
exactly.
she wants to.
Yeah. Yeah. The best ones are when it's like a nice day and you find a nice gravel bar and we can set up, you know, like a picnic or something, and I can fish and she can do her thing, read a book or whatever, and it's trade off, right? So I'll have to manage my expectations now with a baby too. So, because the plan is to get her out on the water as soon as possible. So
fair enough.
Just gotta figure out how to do that.
Perfect. I'm sure, you know, back in Wyoming, you were probably hunting and fishing as soon as you were.
Oh yeah.
You were old enough to hold a BB gun off the.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's the plan with our little one as well. So.
I know. I was born late October, and all of the big game season back home is the first couple weeks of October.
Yeah, you were born right in the thick of it.
That's my parents were antelope hunting with my mom being 8.5 months pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of was born into it.
Nice. Can't skip antelope season for a baby.
No. Nope. It's bouncing her across the pastures, chasing those things.
Yeah. But that's one thing I really miss about Wyoming is pronghorn. Love those things.
They're fun. I haven't got back for them since I moved up here, but a couple of my buddies have gone down.
Oh, nice.
Gone hunting, like, based out of my parents' place. And okay. Then they send me pictures, and I'm like, I got to get back sometime.
Yeah, that's every time I go home, it's like there's, you can take the boy out of Wyoming, but you can't take the Wyoming out of the boy. I always, yeah, love that place.
I can't see myself moving back, but it's nice to, you know, I tend to go back over our Christmas break every year.
Yeah, same, yeah.
And it's always kind of the same transition for me. I go back, and for the first 3-4 days, I'm like, man, I miss this place. I can move back here.
Yeah.
And after about 3, 4, maybe 5 days, I'm like, okay, I'm glad I'm visiting, and I remember why I left, though. And then by the time I'm done, I'm like, okay, I got to get back to Alaska. Alaska's better.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I went for a visit this past Thanksgiving, and it was, you know, the weather in Wyoming is so finicky. It can be, you know, blue, sunny skies in November, December, but then the next day you get a sideways blizzard that, you know, blows semis over and puts 7 feet of snow on the interstate. But during the nice days, I got out and I was hunting sharptails and pheasants like every day, and it's like, this is amazing, like hunting in November, you know. And then, of course, the next day at the drop of a hat, it just turns a sideways blizzard. And it's like, oh, yeah, that can happen, too, you know.
And everybody always asked me about the weather when I moved up here. And I'm like, it is so much better up here because
it kind of is. Yeah.
You know what to expect.
Exactly. Yeah. Like October to April, give or take, it's going to be winter, you know. And then outside of that, it's going to be a nice, you know, pretty predictable summer. Sometimes we get rain, but, you know, that's. I can deal with that.
I was talking to my parents this winter, and I think it was in January that they had, it went from 50 above to 30 below in like 30 hours.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
So I'm like, I like being where the weather is actually stable.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be cold here, but at least you know it's going to be cold.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't break out the shirt sleeves one day and then next day you got to put on the parka.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been out fishing in the spring where it started out bluebird day and then end up being caught in a blizzard.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, that said, I think Wyoming and Alaska are pretty similar just in, you know, like the mentality of the people that live here. You know, there's that self-sufficiency, sort of that independence, which I really appreciate, you know, is like going from home to a new home, and now Alaska's become my home, you know. So it's interesting in that regard.
That's, I agree. Like, Lingle was 550 people. Yeah. I moved to Cake, which was exact same population.
That's funny, yeah.
Everybody back home, you got a big garden that you're canning and all of that. Yeah. Up here, and it's, you're not canning anything, but you are not, like, growing it. It's right. Not in your garden, but you're still canning, you know, jarring all of the fish and stuff. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah, totally. So
it's kind of a subsistence lifestyle in both places.
Yeah, so for sure.
And hunting season, like, everybody marks their calendar and knows.
Yeah.
You know, whether schools actually give the first day of moose season off or the first day of deer season back home. Yep. Or not, the kids are going to be gone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as teachers, you got to plan for those days. It's like, okay, probably half or more of my class is going to be gone, so better not cover anything critical today.
Absolutely. It's been kind of, like, it's been fun to be able to see that and feel somewhat at home.
Yeah.
Even though you're 3,000 miles away.
I agree.
So what else has been keeping you busy up here? What kind of things have you seen that are fun and enjoyable to get out and do?
You know, that's a good question, Matt. Like, everyone talks about, you know, camping, hiking, all that stuff. I do that really as a means just to get to my bird hunting and fishing spots, you know, so I won't call myself a hiker or a camping enthusiast per se, just in the fact that both of those things allow me to experience, you know, fishing and hunting, the things that I truly love. But I think it's cool that we just have the abundance of opportunities here. I mean, we talked about the whole public land thing. Like, that's kind of a blessing and a curse. I mentioned with trapping, it was more of a curse for me, but with hunting and fishing, it's been a total blessing because, you know, on the Kenai especially, like, if I want to go ptarmigan hunting, just get on one of those trails, pick a trail, any trail sort of thing, and you can hike up and be basically alone in the mountains, you know, in a couple hours hike. So that's pretty amazing and something that you won't find anywhere else. And then fishing too, you know, you deal with other people, but there are ways around that, right? Get up earlier, hike farther, you know, if you want it, the opportunity is here. And so, yeah, all the other stuff, camping and hiking. Camping's great because I can set up a tent and get up at 2 a.m. the next morning and be basically on the stream that I want to fish. Hiking, like, you get some amazing experiences on your way to the thing that you want to do. So, yeah, it's hard to complain about any of it.
And it's not like you have to worry about timing and being up when the sun's up and stuff.
Exactly,
like that.
Exactly, yep.
Like, that's kind of been one of the biggest transitions for me. Mm-hmm. Moving up here is, you know, it was 11:30 last night and I was like, oh shoot, I need to be up in like 4 hours to get up. Yep. Here to Anchorage and see you. And
yeah,
still light outside.
I know, that's the same with, well, renovating this house. It's been like 10:30 at night and it's still light enough to, you know, use a saw outside, and it's like, okay, we better get to bed if we're going to do this again tomorrow. So yeah, it's, you gotta, I don't know, in the summertime, salmon season especially, I kind of live like a zombie. But it's like salmon season's limited time offer, so you got to make the most of it. So that's kind of my plan kingfish in these next few days is, you know, starting to fish at 10 p.m., getting off the water 2-3 a.m., maybe nap during the day a little bit, and then do it all again. So that's what you got
to
do.
Do you find that the fish bite better then, or there's fewer people to compete with?
Kind of both. I mean, you know, kings, they can be a pretty moody, finicky species, and I don't know, maybe it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy because I fish during low light, that's when I catch fish. Maybe they bite best all day, but I think when the light's lower, they feel a little more protected and willing to take a fly. And also, yeah, the people's kind of the big one for me. There are people that'll, you know, be fishing with me at midnight, 1 a.m., but not a whole lot of them. I have a lot more casting room, so I appreciate that.
Gotcha. Nice. Now, are you fishing where it's pretty tidal dependent too, or?
Sort of. I mean, it's, I don't know, maybe 5-6 miles from the ocean. And so you can definitely see trends where, you know, the tide's coming in and fish are following that. That's when the fishing tends to be better. But I don't know. That's always been a head scratcher for me, is, you know, timing the tides just right and everything. I mean, just get a tide table, right, and do some research and you can figure it out. But, you know, coming from Wyoming, where you're about as far as you can be from an ocean, I've never been super saltwater inclined. So I tend to go more for the freshwater opportunities. King salmon and steelhead are kind of where I, you know, bridge that gap a little bit. So.
Gotcha. And yeah. That's, you know, I'm with you on it. It was kind of a different thing when I moved up here.
Yeah.
Some people are saying, oh, you got to, like, where we were when I was back in Cake, yeah. Where we were fishing for the silvers, was very much tidal. Like, you're fishing freshwater, but when it's high tide, that water is probably 5 feet higher than right. when it's low tide, because yeah. you're right there on it. And some of the people are like, man, you got to fish like high tide to an hour after. That's when it's best. I always found my best fishing was when it was lower tides.
Yeah.
I claim, or felt like, the fish were more congregated in the pools.
Yeah. Then. Yeah. It's a good point.
There's also the fact that I was the only one fishing and everybody else right. was waiting for those high tides.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, it seemed to work better for me that way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a quote from one of my favorite fly fishing authors, John Gearock, and it's, if you fish the wrong fly long enough and hard enough, it becomes the right fly. And I kind of feel that way about timing too. Like, if you just fish all the time, eventually you're going to connect, you know, regardless whether it's high tide, low tide, sunrise, sunset, whatever. So yeah, I think putting in the hours is more important, or at least being willing to, you know, and then, yeah, because I think if you're focused like that, willing to put in your time, you know, things start to happen, you know, luck, they call it. But it's really just being prepared for the opportunity when it comes.
What is it? Luck is just when prepared meets opportunity.
Exactly. Or yeah. Something like that. So
I'm paraphrasing and butchering that, but that's what I do best.
I think you caught the gist of it. Yeah.
So.
But.
What about you get out on the salt for halibut and rockfish at
all? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we try and do, you know, a halibut trip every year, just because it's tough to beat halibut in terms of eating. And it's just a lot of fun, too. I mean, it's I don't bait fish a lot. Burbot and halibut are the only two species I bait fish for, but it can be pretty darn fun when it happens. So.
And burbot's another one of those that is on my list. I haven't. You know, you've got totally different experience being interior when you moved up than I do, and so burbot I want to get after. But with the halibut, you know, I don't know if you heard the last couple of episodes that we did that were on the surf fishing, but you might have to come down and do that with us next year when we
Sounds pretty cool, surf fishing for halibut.
And so you got to wade through quite a few sharks to get your halibut, but even that's fun. I mean, being a Wyoming kid, catching sharks is kind of a cool thing.
That's awesome. So. Yeah. Yeah, burbot, I mean, that's kind of how I fish for burbot. Obviously, I'm not surf fishing because they're freshwater, but just casting a bait out and sitting there waiting. I mean, they bite best at night. I tend to fish it during the spring melt, you know, and so you're fishing, like I said before, like 12 a.m. to 4 a.m., something like that, but... there's something about bait fishing. That's what I grew up doing in Wyoming for like carp and catfish, you know. And as much as I like to think of myself as like a fly fishing purist, there's something about plunking bait for those species that I'll just never be able to get out of me, you know. I love that. So
I haven't done the burbot, but I always kind of feel like it's a lot like the catfishing back.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, as far as eating fish go, I think burbot is far and away the best eating fish in Alaska, anywhere, period, for that matter. I love burbot, so you'll have to get your hands on some.
That much better than halibut, even, huh?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a white fish. It's very similar to halibut, but I think it's just more, I don't know, buttery, softer texture. Like, yeah, it's really versatile too. I mean, kind of like halibut, you can do just about anything you want to it. So
that's. I did catch one when I was back, you know, Wyoming on the west side of the state.
Yeah.
They have them. And so I was over there with friends and I caught one time.
Okay.
It was one of those where, like, I was coming through, got a fish with them for a couple hours and then leave, and they kept the fish.
So you didn't get to experience the culinary aspect.
Nope. Have not got to eat them yet.
Yeah. That is another thing I miss moving from Fairbanks to Anchorage. I miss burbot. I mean, you can catch them around here. You're going to have to drive a little bit, but. Fairbanks, I mean, they're just everywhere. The Tanana River is one of the best places for a burbot. So,
something I want to go after. So maybe spring breakup or something next year.
Yeah.
Get up there.
Yep.
So that'd be cool. You said you're going to go down for the Kings. What else are you, any other adventures or just getting ready for the kiddo?
Getting ready for the baby's the big thing. My wife's a wedding photographer and being pregnant, you know, she's got a full summer book, but I'm like, you're not carrying anything. Like I'm going to be your assistant at all these. So running around the state with her, doing weddings, which is kind of nice because those are all on the weekends. And then I have the weeks to fish. Kings kind of kick off my year. Normally it's Steelhead, but this year I was in New Mexico, Arizona with some students, and I actually got to do my first fly fishing down there for Gila trout, which was pretty awesome. Kings, then trout on the parks. That's usually pretty fun. They start keying in on mouse flies, and that's some of the most fun you can have is catching those trout on mouse flies. And then end of June, it'll be Copper River sockeyes, and then July, probably some more sockeyes. I don't know. Then silvers start showing up in August, and then the rainbow fishing gets good again. So then bird hunting and a baby. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
That's, sounds like a pretty full calendar.
Well, like I said earlier, it's about making the most of it, right? It's a fleeting season, so.
With your wife doing the photography, you get her to plan all of the weddings based off of where you're wanting to go fishing?
Or? I do try and get her itinerary, you know, and say, okay, well, this is close to this stream, so if we leave a day early, we can fish here, you know. But, yeah, we'll see what we can do there.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I don't know. One of the things I've grappled with being a fly fishing writer is, and especially a road system fly fishing writer, is, you know, not wanting to hotspot places, not wanting to, you know, love things to death, so to speak, because I love Alaska and I love being able to do what I do here. But writing about it, I feel like you're always in constant danger of, you know, you want to encourage people to get out and experience the things that I've been fortunate enough to, but at the same time, you don't want to encourage so many people that it ruins the resource, you know, so. That's always been a fine line for me, and I've kind of gravitated more towards like why to writing than how to writing. So like in my book, It's Only Fishing, you're not gonna learn how to catch Alaskan species on the fly. Like that's not who I am as a writer. There are plenty of other books that do that, but if you want to kind of live vicariously through my experience and see road system Alaska through my eyes, then it's a good way to do that. But that's kind of my conclusion, is that I just want to impart experience rather than, you know, tell someone how to do it. I think you'll learn more and have a better time if you go out and kind of figure things out for yourself. You know, you'll experience your version of Alaska. Whereas if you just do everything, follow instructions to a T that, you know, somebody 10 years ago wrote, like that was their experience. I think you should go find your own experience. And Alaska's an awesome place to do that.
Well, and fish are, what worked today might not work tomorrow, exactly. Let alone 10 years from now. Like there are some trends and some things that are probably always going to work.
Yeah.
But there's also just, you know, you got to be willing to get out and put your own spin on it.
Yeah. And that's tough to grapple with, especially as a beginner. You know, you want some success to sort of validate the time and effort you're putting in. But it's just like anything, you know, put in the hours and law of averages, right? All those empty hours will turn into something pretty spectacular. So,
nice. Yeah, I kind of, with this podcast, that's kind of the same idea as what I'm going for. I try not to give away any secret spots or anything like that. Like, you know, it's more about swapping stories and just feeling like you're sitting around the campfire than it is, hey, you got to do this and you got to try this and that sort of thing.
Yeah, totally.
So
that's cool. I like that. Yeah, sort of sitting around the campfire thing. I think that's more interesting to listen to, for one thing. And it's more fun. So
that's kind of my goal and where I want to go with it anyway. And so that's kind of, it's still new. I'm still trying to get my feet underneath me on this.
Yeah.
But it's been fun.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think it's got some legs. I mean, I listened to your Black Bear episode. I really like that. I like the format, and hope it continues into something sustainable and long term for you.
I'm gonna keep trying. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. So cool.
All right. Well, it was good having you on here, Joe, and I appreciate you sharing your stories with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Matt. It was fun.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Joe is a fun and intelligent guy that I'm sure will be on again in the future. If you'd like to check out his book, It's Only Fishing, like was mentioned in the episode, you can find it on Amazon as well as most other online book retailers. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to give it a 5-star rating and like or follow on your podcast app. We also now have a Facebook page, so go ahead and check us out at The Fat Alaskan, and feel free to leave a comment about this episode or anything you would like to hear in the future. Hopefully you can get out and enjoy the woods and water, and tune in next week for another episode of The Fat Alaskan Podcast.